The Arachayim takes the names of the places that they traveled, and he shows such an incredible significance. And he tells us, what's the significance? And we already learned one significance, that it alludes to all the different sins that they did. But he says, no, he's going to give us a whole different, deeper way to look at it, what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling us. And interestingly, you would think that this might be something that they should learn in Bereishis, because it's more of an introduction to somebody who wants to learn Torah. These are the prerequisites. He's going to give us a whole list of prerequisites of what we have to have as far as our personality and our fear of Hashem, we'll see in a minute, in order for us to be able to successfully engage in learning Torah and then implementing it. Now, why is it all the way in Chumash Devarim? Because it makes sense that it's part of Moshe Rabbeinu's legacy that Moshe Rabbeinu is leaving us with, and he's telling us, until now you were lucky enough to receive the teachings from me directly. You know, he taught the Torah, and obviously anybody who had the opportunity, the mazel, and it's such a privilege of learning Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu, all of these things would have come naturally. But now it's coming to the next generation. So here Moshe Rabbeinu is telling them, these are things you have to work on. And you'll see in a minute what I mean, and we'll see it's beautiful. So many beautiful things. And for me, I'll tell you just a little small thing. We'll get to one or two of them that are a little bit contrary to what people look at in life, view what is a value nowadays. But I think it's quite incredible. So let's start. So he says like this, if you look at your page in front of you, I think it is, let me just see which part. Yeah, but it starts on the first page. I restapled it to make it right. I know, because the second page is, yeah, that's right, Reeve, it starts there. Okay, so I want to show you something. So he says like this, if you look at the first column of that page on the bottom, first column, Be'ever Hayaradein. Yeah, that's the one, Rona, exactly. On the bottom it says, Be'ever Hayaradein. In that paragraph. Do you see it's this, before the Aleph, Beis, and Gimel there, you know, that one. Okay, so he says like this. First of all, I'll just tell you this one orally, he says that, as we mentioned, he held himself back from giving them rebuke until they would get to this place called Eivar Yardin. Because, and this is a very beautiful idea, just because now they have, as he says, because here they see that they reached where they're meant to be, they're like where they wanted to be, and then she'oz yikablu musare, then they're going to be able to receive his musar v'loy mikaydem, and not before shehayu miruchake hatikva. This is very beautiful language, because before that they were like people who had lost hope, and people, he says, v'nafsham k'tzara, and they're, if you want to say, their spirit was very shortened. They were not open to receive anything. But now that they're at the brink of entering the land and things look hopeful, things look up, here Moshe feels that he can tell them and teach them what he needs to teach them. Okay, now, let's see. Then he goes. He says like this, that really, and this is the last three lines of this paragraph, ki b'mikra mu'at, in this short thought, Psukim, Li made Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu teaches us, Klolus Yiras Hashem, in general, like if you want to say the rules or the, really like the all-encompassing of how to fear Hashem, Umidais Hagunais, and the correct Midais, right, so the correct attributes that a person has to have, Hatzrichin, that are needed, that are necessary, Laholchim B'Seiras Hashem, to those who go in the ways of the Torah of Hashem, the Haim Midais Tisha is going to number 9. Let's see what they are. So the first one, he says, Sheyihye Lekeach Midasai Shel Avraham. We should learn, and this we did do last week, we finished with this, that a person should learn from the Midas of Avraham, because what do we know about Avraham? Where does Avraham come in here? So it says, Avraham is called Avraham HaIvri. He is Avraham who is the Ivri. Well, literally that means he came from across. You know, that's where he came. He came across and then he came into the land. But it means really more that Avram stood on one side and the rest of the world stood on the other. Nothing has changed, right? That's what's all the way from Avram's time. But what does that mean? And he says, where do we see that? We see that in the word, Ba'imrei Ba'ever, right? It says, Ba'ever Hayardin. Now, what is the Midah of Avraham? He doesn't spell it clearly, but we all know the Midah of Avraham is the Midah of Chesed. Avraham represents Chesed. Now, Chesed, just very quickly, interesting because in the Tanya that we're learning now, you know, the Tanya is divided also according to the year, it discusses the concept that when Hashem created the world, He created the world initially with absolute chesed. And what is absolute chesed? Absolute chesed means that you're doing something for somebody else who has done zero for you. In other words, there is nothing, the person doesn't deserve it, he didn't earn it, he did nothing. And it's just, in other words, it's just the pure kindness of the giver. That's what chesed. Chesed is absolute kindness without taking into account anything, whether the other person deserves it, whether the other person has earned it, nothing. It's just that you are giving for the sake of giving. That's how Hashem created the world, because initially we didn't do anything. But in Tanya it explains beautifully, but afterwards, after Hashem already created the world and then He created people, now in truth, if we want to arouse Hashem's kindness, what we really should do is we should do kindness. When we give tzedakah down here, what that does is it arouses that Hashem should give us tzedakah. And really, we are all recipients of Hashem's tzedakah, otherwise we wouldn't be alive. That's how we are alive. But the idea of chesed being this like, if you want to say, unconditional kindness. Okay, that's the first thing. Again, interesting why it's not so much to do with first, it has to do with what comes in the pasuk first, but just to understand why that would be first and what that has to do with learning Torah. So we'll see other things, but a very beautiful thing is that if we realize that we are the recipients of Hashem's kindness, that's the only way we're here, then we realize that everything, first of all, that we have to totally rely on Him. Everything we have absolutely comes from Him. And we don't have any expectations, because it's not that we deserve it, right? It's not that we've done something. We didn't do anything before we were born. Hashem just, out of His kindness, made us be born, right? And out of His kindness, He gave us the Torah, and He gave us the privilege of learning Torah and engaging in the mitzvahs so that we can, on some level, reciprocate a little bit. In other words, learn from Hashem and also do kindness. So this is a very powerful thing that comes through that we have to realize even before we start learning. Okay, one. Let's see number two. Sheyihyeh mardus b'libay. Mardus is an interesting word. It sounds like mayr, it sounds almost like rebellion, but it doesn't mean that. It means rebellion against yourself, which means a person should have remorse. A person should be filled with regrets. This sounds a bit heavy, like you don't walk around feeling guilty. But what it really means, and as he says, Tamid, he's reading his heart, he says, he quotes from a Gemara in Brachas, it says, Toiva mardus achas b'libay shel adam mimeya malkiyos. So the word Yardain teaches us that. And what does this mean? Sometimes if a person does something wrong, well, they can get hit. As we know, the concept of Malkus in the Torah, right? The lashes that you get. But in what that might represent is sometimes we can have an external thing that shakes us up a little bit. And here the Gemara says, you know what would be better? If we were just inside of ourselves, feel a regret when we do something wrong, then we don't need the external thing to shake us up. But much deeper than that, that for sure is what sets us more to correct our ways. When something external shakes you up, sometimes you take the message, sometimes you don't. Here, if a person stops, in other words, the idea is that a person has to stop, and we know it also, it's interesting, in Tanya it explains, but in many Svarim it explains, a person is not meant to walk around with guilt and regret all their life. So you have to set aside times for this. Erev, Reish Chodesh, every night before you go to sleep, the month of Elul. There are certain times that are designated for us to be assessing what we have done up until then and figuring out how we could be better. And this is absolutely integral if a person wants to be growing in Torah. It's integral for any person who wants to grow in anything. But for sure, if you want to be a person who lives with Torah, where Torah becomes part of you. That's the second thing. Learn from the word Yardain, like Marud, to reassess and to regret and to feel remorse and hopefully, therefore, take steps to change. Second thing. What's the third? This one we'll develop, we'll do a little bit deeper. Midas Ha'anava. I know, we all know that and we hear it all the time. Humility. Now, obviously, the one who can tell us about humility is Moshe Rabbeinu. He is the most humble man who ever lived, as we said, right? That Torah attests that he's the most humble person that ever lived on the face of the earth. Now, where does humility come in with Torah? So first, let's read what the Ora Chaim says. So now we're on the top of the second column. He says, "La'olam," it's the same page. The same page on the top of the second. "La'olam yosim adam atzmai kamidbar." Where do we see humility here? Because it says the word midbar. Midbar is a desert. And what's a desert? A desert, as we know, is a place where nothing grows. It doesn't have anything to be proud of. It doesn't have amazing, beautiful trees. It doesn't have plants. It doesn't have big buildings. There's no pride in the desert. The desert represents a sense of humility. And that we learn from the word Bamidbar. Now, I just want to show you something interesting, because the Ora Chaim here alludes to another place that he discusses it. And he mentions this concept when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim. And when they left Mitzrayim, we know that they traveled to go to Har Sinai. And one of the places that it says, Vayisu me Refidim. They traveled from a place called Refidim. And then they went to Har Chayrev. That's where the Torah was given. That's another name for Har Sinai. And over there, and this is what I have here on the second column, he says something very beautiful. He says, what is Refidim? Because you have to travel away from Refidim. That's the only way to come close to Har Sinai. So the word Refidim in Hebrew is Rifyoin. Rifyoin means, sounds crazy, laziness, heaviness, a feeling almost of paralysis, you know, where you're just like, I can't do anymore. It's just too much. And you just become paralyzed. It's a feeling, and also comes from a certain amount of laziness, which interestingly, sometimes people, this is why he mentions it in this context, we have to travel away from that. So just one thing, interesting, because sometimes people might think that humility can sometimes hold a person back, right? When you think low of yourself, well, then you think you can't do it, right? That will hold you back, and then you will not be ambitious. You know, sometimes we associate ambition more with arrogance than with humility. Whereas in Torah, we have a whole different definition of all these words. So the first thing we have to leave is this feeling of laziness, that feeling of heaviness, so to speak, that feeling of complacency. That has to be gone. That's what Refidim is. You have to travel away from there. But where do you have to arrive at? So obviously the goal is to get to Har Sinai. But on the way, he says, you have to make sure that you have humility. The only way that you're going to continuously travel to get to Har Sinai is with humility. And he says in the second paragraph on that second column, so it's the second to bottom paragraph, he says, "Hu hashiflus," right? Inyan habezu hashiflus. Shiflus is usually the negative word, and we'll see in a minute, we'll take it apart, because shiflus means lowness. The truth is, humility cannot be translated as a feeling of lowness, because humility is much deeper than that. And a feeling of lowness usually is that feeling of, like, I'm nothing. And therefore, why will you put any effort in if you're nothing and you're not able to? But here he just uses both. So I'll just show you. Shiflus v'anava. Ki ein divrei teira miskayimin elo b'mi shemashpil atzmai umasim atzmai kemidbar. Because the Torah only will continue to exist by somebody who lowers themselves and makes themselves as if they are a desert. And he says like this, and what does that mean? That's why it says, so they traveled from Refidim and they camped in the desert. The desert being the humility. And that's what he says, that why is a desert humility? Everybody, it's free for everybody also to travel there. Anybody can step there. There's no tolls, there's no highways, that's what it represents. The idea being, it's open, it's free, it doesn't have anything to be proud of, it's absolute humility. And then obviously in that context, in Parshas Yisrael, he says, then you come to the place where, he says, Chayrev. Chayrev actually in this context means his chabros, connection. If you want Torah to continue to exist, you have to connect to, he says, Talmidei Chachamim, but also to each other. Because that's the Torah way, we learn together. When you learn together and you learn from each other, that will ensure that the Torah will remain permanent. But that he said in Parshas Yisrael. I want to come back now for a moment to this concept of humility. Before, on the next page that you have, so turn your page, and I want to just see something there before we go. Sorry. It's the page, yeah. want to see one thing. Before we go to Dalit, but I wanted to share something with you about this humility, because this is a very powerful thing. So we know, we say humility is not lowness. So what is humility? How do we explain humility in Torah as a value? What should we be striving for, so to speak? So the truth is, we know, we've learned this many times, right? There's many times it's explained, especially when we talk about Moshe Rabbeinu. The big question is always asked, how could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest, the most humble person that lived on the face of the earth? I mean, Moshe, obviously, if he looked in the mirror, he knows who he was. Not only who he was, but he was the one that had the privilege to go up on Har Sinai and spend 40 days and 40 nights learning directly from Hashem himself. That itself is beyond. No human being reached the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. And not only that, but what he did for the Jewish people, 40 years, selfless, incredible selfless, being the most unbelievable shepherd for the Jewish people, standing up for them all the time. How could it be that Moshe should be considered the most humble? So what was the humility of Moshe? So let's break it down for a moment. The usual way that we explain it, and I'll just take it a little bit deeper than that, is the usual way is, what we say, is we say that Moshe Rabbeinu had this thought in his mind, and he said like this. It's not that he didn't know his worth. It's not that he didn't know. He knew his worth. He knew what he had accomplished. He knew that there were so many special things that he was able to understand Torah on a deeper level. He had the privilege of learning directly from Hashem. He knew all of that. And that he stood and he defended the Jewish people. But what he said in his mind was, if somebody else was given the same opportunities that I was given, they would do probably as good as me and maybe even better. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu thought. In other words, when we talk about humility, it's not denying how our capabilities. That's not humility. That's actually lying, and that's actually silly. And that actually causes, as we said before, that laziness, that paralyzed, because you don't feel worthy enough to do anything. So a person has to recognize the gifts Hashem gave them, because Hashem gave it to us for a purpose. So you have to know what we're good at, we have to recognize it, and we have to develop it. And we have to get better at the things we're good at, for sure, and use it. And use it properly, with a certain sense of confidence. Of course, that's part of it. But at the same time, realize, as we say, had Hashem given somebody else that opportunity that I had, and that gift, and that talent, and that whatever it may be, those parents, those friends, those whatever it may be that I had, those circumstances, they would probably do better than me. That's what we always explain. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu thought, and that's humility. But really, it was a little deeper than even that. Another step. A person can go even deeper. A person, and this is really what we're meant to strive. If Hashem had given somebody else the same capabilities that he gave me, he would have definitely done better than me. That's like, for sure, that's a real humble person. A person who is sure that had somebody else had my opportunities, they would do more with it than I can. Now, what does that do for you? It makes that when you look at other people, you don't look down at them. You just realize they didn't have my opportunities, or they don't have that ability, or whatever it may be. And what it does is also, it makes that most important thing is that it gives a person that energy that I better keep growing in what I am. Because if Hashem gave it to me, well, I better use it. Otherwise, I know this is a very, I just thought of a, it's a very, harsh example, but it's like if somebody was given the most beautiful dinner somebody brought over, like from the most expensive meat and the most expensive vegetables, and then what do they do with it? They eat one little bit and the rest they throw in the garbage. I mean, who would want it? You would actually be hurting to do that. You don't treasure what Hashem has given you. You're throwing it away. That's what it is. So a person who realizes in that depth, that if somebody else was given, they would for sure do more than me. That pushes a person to realize, I better keep working with what I have. I better keep perfecting myself, make myself the best person I could be, do as much as I could. But it even goes deeper than that. What's the deepest one? And we say definitely Moshe Rabbeinu contained this level of humility. So not only do they recognize that they have special things because Hashem gave it to them. Not only do they look at other people and say they would have done as good and for sure better than me. But even more, whenever they see somebody else who has less than them, because they were given less. Not that it's because I'm any better, but they were given less opportunity. They were given less capability. They had worse circumstances than me. What this person does is immediately lowers themselves. They don't even look at it as lowering, but they go down to that person's level, engage with that person, and try to lift them up. Share what they have with the other. Nobody and nothing is beneath them. That's real humility. And it says this is what Moshe Rabbeinu had, and this is really what the Aruch Hayim HaKadosh is telling us, that if we want to acquire Torah, we have to develop within ourselves that real, that idea. Why? Why does it have to be there? Because if we think about it, when we're learning Torah, you know, the beautiful thing we're told, that's the beauty of Torah. When we learn Torah, it's not just learning something that Hashem gave us thousands of years ago. It's mamish, we have to picture it. It explains even in Shulchan Aruch, it's as if Hashem is sitting in front of us and teaching it to us at that moment. We are receiving it from Hashem at that moment, and He's teaching it to us, like He's the Chavrusa. You know, Hashem is there with us at that moment, giving us and teaching us the Torah. Which means, every time we learn, it's a little bit like the Shechina in the Beis HaMikdash that comes down. You know, we always talk about the revelation of the Shechina, but we have that when we learn Torah. What does Hashem do when He creates the world, as we mentioned before? He lowers Himself, that's what Hashem did, to create the world, and not just to create a world, but to sustain a world, right? To be there with us. He's constantly lowering Himself, and as we know in Kabbalah, condensing Himself, so that He should be able to keep us alive, and sustain us, and give us everything that we have. So if we want to have the Shechina be with us, which all of us want, and we want to be able to learn Torah properly, and live a Torah life, and live a life where Hashem is there with us, we have to obviously live that way. By us lowering, and it's not even lowering, that's not the right word, but by us extending ourselves, to realize that we have to include others, and share whatever we have with others. And it's a fascinating thing because sometimes a person might think, well, that just comes from arrogance. If I think I have more than somebody else, maybe that's an arrogance. But no, this is real humility. Because it's not that I feel better than the other person. Not at all. I'm worse than the other person. But I have something he doesn't have. It's just a fact. You see, when a person is full of arrogance, well, then first of all, they don't even notice the other person. That's the first thing that happens because you become very all consumed in yourself. But not only that, but then if it comes from a place of arrogance, the other person will also feel it. And they won't be very happy to be with you. But when it comes from a place of humility, and you realize that it's just a gift, literally, a gift from Hashem that you didn't deserve, you didn't earn nothing. Hashem just gave it to you. You feel a responsibility to share it with others. And it's not that you are doing anything extra by doing that. It's not like you deserve something for it and feel good about yourself for it. It has to be. It's the only way. And that's real humility. And that's what the Aruch Hayim HaKadosh is teaching us here. So it's a very beautiful idea. This is one of the things, it's not even prerequisites. These are prerequisites and they continuously have to be reinforced as we learn and as we try to apply what we're learning. And that comes from the word Bamidbar. Now let's go to the next one. And then he says, so the next one is developing what we just said a little more. I'll just show you. This is Dalit, so it's on the next page. The page that's on the top says Arachayim. Shetiyah hanova baderech hanois, v'loi baderech hapchisos hanimas. It's what we said before. It's not a matter of feeling low. Nois means a proper, a dignified humility. It's not like you make yourself like I'm nothing. And let's see why. Why is a person not allowed to say about themselves, I'm a nobody, I'm nothing, I'm bad, I'm terrible, I'm horrible, whatever it may be. You're not allowed to. And he says, why? Because that actually is the opposite of Torah. He says, because, he said, like the Rambam writes in Hilchos Deis, Teichachais al avain im yire ish oiver pi Hashem. V'yoymar, mi ani, umi beisi loichiach anoshim gedoilim. Ela tzorich loichiach l'tzad chiyav ha'arvos. Because he says, if a person decides to say, I'm nothing, I'm a nobody, and thinks that's humility, that's the biggest excuse for a person to feel that he doesn't have to do anything. Not only doesn't he have to do anything for himself, because you know you feel like, ah, oh, I'm such a nobody, I'm such a nothing. Why should I even try? Why should I even bother? And that's absolutely ridiculous. But besides for that, you will not even feel like if you see somebody else doing something wrong. And obviously, we have to know how to do this. But when you see somebody else doing something wrong, a person who has false humility will just shirk back, right? Not say anything, not try to help the other person correct themselves. Because who am I? How can I dare say something, right? But it doesn't come from arrogance to help somebody fix themselves. It comes from caring. If you don't care, that's what we see. You know, we always say the example that's given. If you go somewhere, like let's say in a shul or even in the supermarket, and you see somebody else that you don't know and their child is acting crazy, well, you'll just keep on going and it won't ruin your day. I mean, you'll just move on. What do you care? But if it's your own child, your own grandchild, I mean, you'll be deathly embarrassed, right? And they'll bother you if they're not behaving. And not only that, but you'll try to help them to behave properly. You'll show them what the right way is. Why? Because you care. You actually care. The other person doesn't mean anything to you, so they can do whatever they like. So this is what we're saying over here, that the humility shouldn't be a type of humility which leads you to say, I'm a nobody, I'm a nothing, and therefore it doesn't matter. I can look at, see everybody doing everything wrong, and I don't have to, I'm not obligated to say anything, and I won't say anything. But of course, as we said, we have to know how to say it, obviously, in the way that the recipient will receive it. When is the right time, as we mentioned, all the different things. But you cannot shirk back your responsibility. And that's why he says a beautiful thing. He says that this idea of arava has two things. One, that the humility which comes from the word bamidbar is humility, but the humility has to be ba'arava. Arava is a arevas. The word is areva, sweetness. So it has to be a sweet humility, as we said before, recognizing the gifts that Hashem has given us. It's not a bitter humility. Not I'm bad, I'm dumb, I'm whatever, I'm all these things that we say to ourselves. No, that's not humility. That's just irresponsibility, really. That's all it is. And actually, that comes from sometimes from a certain level of arrogance, because I'll just accept myself how I am, and everybody has to. That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. That's laziness. We're talking about a sweet humility, where a person knows what they are, knows their gifts. Of course I have things I have to fix. Of course, we all do. That's the idea. That's the humility. But we'll do it. We'll work together. Hashem will help us. And we'll continuously grow. And at the same time, the word is not only sweet, but arava is from the word Kol Yisrael arevim zelazet, to feel responsible for another. Because the humility, as we said, cannot, should not, and if it does lead you to not feeling responsible, you know it's not humility. That's coming from a wrong place. But the humility should lead you to realize, just like I have what I have, I want the other to also. And obviously we can only do it with what in our limited way. But whatever, however we can, we share. We share what we have. So that's the second one. Then number A, he says, this is very interesting. He says, Istakel b'shloisha dvarim, right? You know that it says in Pirkei Avos, look at three things, know where you've come from and where you're going, right? Right? And that Hashem is writing everything down. So he says, Lufnei, and whom you are going to give a din v'cheshben, right? Who are you going to, in the future, give an accounting? So he says, and that's because of that. And also it says in Pirkei Avos, a person should do tshuva one day before they pass away. Obviously, we don't know when we're going to pass away, so we have to be constantly doing tshuva, as we know. And he says, what does that mean? What's it hinted? It's hinted in the words, mul suf. What is mul suf? That you are constantly facing the end. Constantly looking, what's the hereafter? You know, my life is not forever, this physical life, and therefore I know I have to constantly be doing tshuva. That's mulsuf. So constantly reassessing where we're going, where we're coming from, and hopefully improve. Then vav, this is a beautiful one, maimer hachasidim, it says, these are the words from the chayvus al vavis. He says like this, haparush, and this is, as I say, so not what's now considered, I don't know, the proper way, but it's beautiful. He says, "Haparush Tzahalosa, it's on Vav. Is it Vav or Zayin? Vav, yeah. Tzahalosa b'fanav v'dahagosa b'libay. Tzahalosa b'fanav means his face is full of, is shining, which means he smiles. And where is his worry? In his heart. Okay. Now, it doesn't mean that a person shouldn't talk over their worry, right? You have to have a friend. And of course we can complain sometimes and we can share. But really, when we walk around generally through the day, what should our face show? Our face should show, it should be lit up. It should show joy. It should show the fact that we are grateful. That's what we should. And where should we keep our worries? In our heart. That's what he says. And where do we learn it from? I'm going to show you beautifully. He says, that's hinted to in the words, Bein Paran u Bein Teufel. Why? Because Keneget Tzahalasai, when we're talking about the shine, the joy that should be on the face, he says Bein Paran. Because Paran is Lashon Pe'er. Pe'er is beauty. It's like that glory, you know, that's what a person should have on their face. Which is, he says, Hefech itzavain, the opposite of sadness, of feeling low, of feeling. I mean, we all have not good moods. That's normal. But what we are trying to work on is that our face should show a lift. You know, we always say we think that our face belongs to us. Our face doesn't belong to us, right? Because who sees our face? We don't see our face. Everybody else does. That's how Hashem designed it. Hashem designed it that we don't see our face, which means that really we have a massive responsibility that our face should show joy, because that's what everybody else sees. And when we are down, we schlep others down. So it's an interesting thing. But that's what the Aruch Chaim says. This is what these words are. This is Moshe Rabbeinu taught them. Bein Paran, what's Teufel? So he says, that's the one thing is that you have to have Paran. Para means that opposite of sadness, that, as he says, shu'panim ra'is, it's a bad face. And he says, u'kenegid itzfein halev, but when we're talking about the worry and the sadness that a person does carry in their heart, which is inevitable for all of us, he says, u'bein teifel, shalayiyye libay arev alav. This is an interesting one. There is a place that a person should have a certain sadness in their heart, but what should the sadness really come from? Now, unfortunately, there are many reasons for us to be sad. But the good sadness is a sadness that a person feels because they, as we meant, like coming, you know, on the back of all the things we mentioned, when a person assesses and says, really, I should be doing a lot better than I am. Really, I should have reacted better. Really, I could be doing more. Really, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that's not a bad thing. In Torah, we don't believe that we walk around just, as we say, accept me for what I am and that's it. I'm finished. I'm a finished product. That's not the Torah view. We're no finished product until the moment we pass away. A person grows until they're 120. They become better people. That's how Hashem, He gives us the strength to do that. It's amazing. It's a hard ask. I'm not saying it's not easy. Very hard. But we can do it. We can. And it's just that little bit that we try. Obviously, we're not going to be perfect. We're growing. This is what we're working on. So that's a beautiful thing. And that's what Teufel means. Because Teufel, he says, let me see the word, how he ties it into the word Teufel. Teufel shalayi alibay arev alav is atzev alibay pachad. Let me see. Because Teufel is secondary. So the person has to think that he's done Teufel like little. He's done a little bit of work. He has to be doing more work. I should be growing more. I should be demanding more of myself. But that has to stay inside. And what you project is a feeling of joy. So this is a very powerful one. And then the last one he says, actually, not the last one, two, three more. Shayyeh alay leif tahar. This is a beautiful one. You should have a pure heart and a clean heart. As he says, David HaMelech says, leif tahar brali aleikim, right? That Hashem has created me with a pure heart. And what does that mean? What's a pure heart? He says, v'yarchik mimenu sinas habriyas, to distance from yourself any feeling of hatred towards another, and jealousy, kina, and tachrus, v'hamisteima, right? So all the hatred, all the jealousy, all the angst, all the feelings of resentment that we have to others, that's what we have to get rid of. That shouldn't be there. That's a pure heart. And that's from the word lovan. Remember in the pasuk? White. Pure like white. That's what our heart should be. Sheyeh lo leiv tahar, sheyisyaches letara, kinoi zesh lavan. We know that purity is always associated with white. And this would be like the Pirkei Avos says, a person should have a lev tov, a good heart. and an ayin tov and a good eye. And the truth is, this is something that, again, that we have to work on constantly, constantly, constantly. I know, I just forgive me, I'll just take the moment, because today actually is Yud Zayin of 17th of, which is my father's birthday. He would have been turning 84. And one thing we always knew it, but when he passed away, and what people said, and especially his own family was so cute, his sisters and his brothers, they said, you know, they told us in the name of their mother, I mean, obviously a mother's bias, but they said, you know, he had a lev tov, and that was so true. That was how they described him, a lev tov, a good heart. And it's true, and that's all he saw. He saw the good in others, he saw the good, and all he tried was, also, he very definitely lived this. Whatever was going through was always on the outside, projected a joy, but he felt it because he did live in his learning, and that gave him joy, tremendous joy, with all the suffering and everything else that was going on any other time, and plenty of, as everybody in this world, nobody's free from yet, so plenty of challenges, but still, and always with the lev tov, and that's what we say, right? There's a very, very important part. He was definitely, his passport said Palestine, definitely. In Tel Aviv in 1941, yeah, yeah.
Do you think this is similar to the Ramban's letter to his son?
It is, you know that? It is, you're right. Very much so, Riva. That's so beautiful, that's such a beautiful letter. You read it, oh my gosh. I always say we should do it once as a shir, like it's so beautiful. Very much, because also very much humility and not to get angry and not to get jealous. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Concentrate while you're dominating.
That's it. You're right. The word facriminus is not even translatable. That's it. It's true. What?
On you,
it's
you.
True. It's true. Yeah, we're working. We're a work in progress. Yeah. That's it. And then he says like this, another beautiful... What?
Smile doesn't even cost anything.
That's it. It doesn't, but it's not easy anyway. That's right. Sometimes it's quite expensive, right? Let's see the number. Ches actually continues. See, this is where we... Because sometimes you say, how could you have this lev tov, and how could you also put on a smile? And so I'll show you. So number ches, he says, Talmud Torah b'kvius. Now this sounds like, what does that have to do with anything? But to be consistent in our learning of Torah, to set aside specific times, as we say, and to learn in a consistent way. He says, like Yaakov Avinu, because what does it say about Yaakov? That he would sit yoshev ayhalim, he would sit in the tent. Talk about that. Exactly, it's funny, it's just Mamish, that was Mamish, my father didn't stop learning. He says, but loy lil might aray, not to learn in a way that's temporary, that's just fleeting. And that's from the word chatzeres. Why chatzeres means, it means a courtyard, because we should be frequenting the courtyards of the Beis HaMedrash. We should be frequenting and learn together, learn and make a set time that we come and we learn. And as we said, and we know it, we know when we do it. You know, it's always easy when you're not doing it, you think, oh, but when you do it, you do realize right away. It is no lift, nothing that lifts a person like learning Torah. Being together, sharing and learning and growing. It is the deepest lift for a person. I know you, some people think, no, it doesn't give you a high. It's a different type of a high, and it gives a person, refocuses everything and makes a person see everything from such a different perspective that no matter what they're going through, it gives you that ability to sort of reshift, if you want to say, to put the right glasses on. It doesn't make everything disappear. And things don't get easier. It's not a matter of easier. It's still as painful, but you see it differently. And that's what he's saying here also. And that all comes, the truth is, you first have to start with humility. Because if a person doesn't feel that sense that they have to grow, well, then they're not even going to attempt any of this. But as long as a person feels that humility, and then a person develops, as we say, and a person has the lev tov, and a person has the learning, and a person has the you know, all of these things will get the person to be a person who is a growing person, a godly person. And that's why he continues. And the truth is, again, seemingly disconnected, but so connected, the only way is, he says we shouldn't be fiery, so to speak, and how do you say, like, really, really schlepped after things of this world, which means the material. If a person is materialistic to the just for the sake of the materialism, forget it. All this you can't do. It doesn't work. You've got to be more spiritual. A person has to know what are the priorities. What really matters at the end of the day. As he says, Shekala haylach achar tayvus libay. Anybody who goes after the desires of their heart, batel hu me'avaydes Hashem, immediately, it is for sure that they will not be serving Hashem. V'tzarech ha'adam lehistapek be'echrechi. He goes even more. Really, the ideal is a person should be able to do with what's necessary. You shouldn't have to look at, for extras, for things that are not necessary. For whom Asherah is ba'imer, that, where do we see that in the Pasuk? V'di Zahav. Right? It says Di Zahav. That was really the ego. But what is Di Zahav? He says that a person should say, Sheyoymar la Zahav dai. He should say, enough gold. I don't need more gold. Now, obviously we know as Jews, and Jews have always, you know, Jews do want to make money because we need to make money to give more tzedakah, to have a beautiful shul, to be able to do the mitzvahs properly. But we're talking here for the sake of the materialism itself. It's not a Jewish value. And how do we know that? We know that that's true because I think that there's no more philanthropic people than the Jewish people. There's no people who are willing to give from themselves, whether we talk about money or time, to each other, even on a simple level. The amount of tzedakah that we give when we're ordinary people, we're not talking about when we're wealthy people, we're just ordinary people. No people are like that in the world because we know what prior, we know what's really valuable. We know, and that's why we do, we live this. And we say to the Zahav, die, it's enough. It's enough for us. Now we can give it away. We are able to share it with others. And that's really, that's what he says. This is a very important principle. Sure, sure.
It's become a sort of security for Jews to have money.
So there is a certain amount, obviously, that we... That's right. So they didn't have property in that sense because they knew that that wasn't permanent. But
to rent some people.
100%. So 100%. But that's a different thing. You're talking about money to use to be able to live and. But we're talking money for the sake of money. What?
Nobody will help a Jew.
Except another Jew, 100%. 100%. But that's why we're there for each other.
Last night at the concert, they made an announcement. Please, there's going to be some artists' exhibition or something at the Great Synagogue. Please support them because the only people who support Jewish artists
are the Jews. This is life. So I just want to finish. He says, or another way to look at it, he says, everything that he has, he should be happy with what he has. He says, as if he has all the gold. He says, and that's what he says, right? Who is wealthy is the one who is satisfied with what he has, with his portion. And that's why he's able to divert his heart to a higher service, and that's to serve Hashem, as we say, Avedas Hashem Aleikim Chaim, because we say, Dizav, we have enough. What we have is enough, because we know Hashem gives us what we need, and we're satisfied with it, and therefore we're not worried, and we're not spending our time on silly things. Rather, we devote ourselves to serving Hashem. And I see a beautiful thing. This is how the Aruch Chaim says, this is what Moshe Rabbeinu, this is just even in his first words, on that first day of his long speech already, gives them so much to help guide them, and for all of us until now, until today, it's all just as relevant as if it was, and it is given again today, as we say. Torah is new every day, so we should try and live some of it, at least a little bit. And Brit Hashem, 37 days. Yes, 37 days. We'll see more of his speech. We will. And Brit Hashem. Well, everybody have a wonderful week. Okay. Yeah, I know. It's like crazy. Time.